Good morning. It's very, very interesting to go from the, you know, physical manifestation and engagement of the service into the Dharma talk. It's wonderful for us to be here together this morning. I think this is very, very sweet. It's interesting what I was curious to talk about, what I was interested in sharing with you this morning was some questions or investigations that came up during session this time. So somehow the frame of energy is very different from this. So I'm curious. Now I'm sort of curious about how that could also manifest when there's a lot of energy and engagement going on. So, well, let's see what comes up. So as you may know, I was out in California for a conference. And while I was out there, there was sort of an announcement that, on the weather news, rain is going to come, and you all know how the person on the TV was saying, you all know how people in San Diego drive when it rains, because it doesn't rain very often. I was joking with Joey on the phone that maybe people have forgotten where the windshield wipers are, and maybe they haven't been used in so long, so that all kind of crud has accumulated on the windshield. And then the rains came, there was sort of rains in the morning, fairly heavy, and then there was a little bit of quiet during the day, and then there was a second wave of rain that came in the evening. And as part of the weather news, there was also a notice that especially people around the area where it had burned around San Diego should be especially careful about flash flooding, because apparently there's something that I think even scientists don't fully understand, where if in Southern California, if an area has burned, there's something that changes in the chemistry or in the geology or in the way that the soil behaves that makes it very susceptible to mudslides. So somehow the water is not absorbed somehow, or is absorbed, but then it turns the mud into mud flow. So it looks like people are aware that that is an issue after it has burned, so there was a little bit of warning going out for that. And then, as you may have heard, the area around Santa Barbara and Montecito, where there had been like a huge fire, like burning for weeks, they also got a lot of rain, and in response, mudslides came, came down the canyons, boulders that looked like the size of cars just came down the hill, houses were swept away, and people died, and it was For me, you know, knowing people in or around Montecito, I was wondering, it's like, you know, where are they? Are they safe? Are they okay? Because it looked like many people had evacuated during the fires, but when sort of a voluntary evacuation order came around because of the mudslides, it looks like many people, you know, chose to stay put. I mean, it's a little bit of rain. I mean, how bad can it be? So it reminded me how somehow in my mind there's an assumption about so many things that they're just going to be that way. I go to bed at night and they're this way, and I wake up in the morning and they're going to be exactly the same way. It's not a conscious assumption, but if I look closely at it, there's actually, I mean, it's almost everything I assume is going to be the same the following day. The way I feel, my health, the people I love, their health, that they're still alive, that, you know, that my car is going to be where I parked it, that, you know, the heat is going to come on at a particular time, that, you know, I turn on the faucet and the water will appear. And to realize, you know, how much of it is actually a lot more tentative than I'm aware of. So, in a way, what is there really that we can rely on? And then during the session this time, I was the monitor, so I feel it's a very there's something very sweet and powerful for me to be able to, you know, look out, take in the whole room, take in all the people sitting there with, you know, who have come there moved by something. And, you know, to sit down and to settle and to become quiet when often that's not so easy, to notice what is coming up, to be present for what is coming up. Whether it's physical discomfort, whether it's emotional discomfort, whether it's memories, stories, feelings, old experiences. So the question came up for me, you know, what is it that gets people here and that gets people to settle in? And to be present. And in my own experience there, I'm not entirely sure how to put it. It feels like something settles and something relaxes in seeing that this is how things are, and there's a sense that I don't want to say it's okay, because it's not okay, sort of sounds like it's condoning what is happening, but it's a sense of a sort of a quiet yes that is a settled place that is ready to receive whatever is actually showing up. It feels like a place of clarity and of truth. It feels like it's home. Quiet, yes. So there is not quite sure how to phrase it. There is sort of a quiet trust that develops that I notice come up that. For me, helps me sustain this practice. Because there really is a sense that that in a way the tools to face what is happening are here. And that the sense of that sometimes arises when the story is in my mind that, oh, you know, there's a problem or I need this or I need this to be a particular way. It's not the complete truth. So the sense of home, sense of truth in the sense of being able to engage with reality as reality is, feels very powerful to me. And I noticed that clearly sitting in session or sitting on retreat is in a way a completely artificially created environment that in a way is designed to allow us to touch that deep place and to give the momentum of the mind the space that it needs to do what it needs to do and exhaust itself. Give the space to just run out. And I wonder in my life, what are the circumstances, what are the moments when I'm willing to let that connection go. Because if I look closely, then there's sort of a wish for comfort that is coming up. There is an urge for something in particular that I need to happen. And I notice that in that wanting, in that tightening, I move away from what is settled, what could be settled. And the being settled doesn't just mean that everything is just perfect and complete and fine. Being settled can also mean realizing that after doing the bows and doing the chanting, you know, I need to stop the chanting to take some breaths here. It's like, whoa, this is, okay. And yet to notice when, as my life is sort of flowing down some kind of river, to notice that there's a fork, that I want things to be my way, can go in one direction. And often the current is very strong, so I need to do a lot of paddling if I want to see about that other fork. And maybe the other fork is something different, and I don't know what. And what is, in a way, very special about that river is that it's not like there is one fork and you make one decision and you're doomed forever if you take one particular fork, but there's another fork not far down the road. So for me, bringing the question into what I do in the day, it's not even a question, it's sort of a curiosity, a sense of investigation about what are the forks that are showing up in the river, and what are the things that make me willing to leave the settled place, the place that feels in accord with what is happening in reality, to leave that behind. And I just ultimately want things my way. And to notice that there's a pain in that. There's a promise, and there's a pain. So the promise is I have a particular way that things should be, and so if I somehow make things happen, then things will be okay that way. I will be comforted, I will be safe, things will be okay. That's the promise. And it also means at the same time that I'm turning away from something that's actually true. There is a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye that somehow speaks to that for me. It's called Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. So what is it in my life that I carefully count, carefully grasp, and carefully hold on to? And that I'm shocked by when it goes. She continues how you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you. How he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plants and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness, she continues, as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows, and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is you I have been looking for." And then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend.